or hospitals that...
This meeting is now being recorded.
Hospitals that have an unusually large number of readmissions within 30 days. So the financial incentives are becoming better aligned on the Medicare side for hospitals and are likely to facilitate the kind of exchange of information in a timely fashion that's necessary to make this work. And I think also as electronic health records become more widespread, it'll be easier for health plans to get information on what actually happens inside the hospital in terms of treatments and drugs and things of that sort. So that is the impetus for this, and we have two very experienced health plans of Health Choice with Katrina Culp and Heidi Eggleston presenting, and then UCARE with Seal Beshi presenting on their experiences, and they've done much of what they've done without the additional financial incentive for hospitals on the Medicare side. So we may talk a little bit in the Q&A about how that may change things going forward. So without further ado, let me turn it over to Katrina and Heidi.
Thanks, Jim. So this is Katrina. I'm going to go ahead and kick it off, and then I will turn it over to Heidi. So thanks, everyone, for being on the call. And we're just going to provide an overview of our plan, really how things were before we kind of had implemented any kind of formal transition of care program, and then really the evolution over the last couple years of the program, and then really leave you with some tips that you can take back and, you know, think about how you can help your plans in implementing a successful program. So starting on slide on the third slide there, the Health Choice overview. So just to give you an overview, Health Choice is a subsidiary of IASIS Healthcare, and IASIS owns and operates 16 hospitals, outpatient facilities, physician clinics, in addition to Medicare and Medicaid health plans in both Arizona and Utah. And then going on to the next slide there, slide six, just to go over the population a little bit. So Health Choice Arizona is the Medicaid plan, and we've been here in Arizona since 1990 and have approximately 180,000 access Medicaid members. And then in our Health Choice Generations D-SNP plan, we have approximately 5,300 dual eligible members. And just to keep in mind, we serve the acute Medicaid-only population, so these members do not have long-term care. But just to point out, I'm sure as many of you are finding, the average age of our members is 50, which, you know, is a little bit different than maybe a traditional Medicare population. And 30% of our total population has a behavioral health condition. So, you know, I think it's great to keep the population demographics in mind as we're thinking about these things. So, and Health Choice Generations started in 2006. So as you'll see as we're talking, the transitional care program has really evolved over the years, and it really did take, you know, time to get where we're at. We'll also have a plan on the exchange, and we have a Medicaid plan in Utah with approximately 2,600 members. So going on to the next slide seven, we just wanted to point out our service area. As far as where our population is, we have for the D-SNP population about 30% of the members are in kind of the Phoenix metro area, Maricopa County. 25% are in Pima County, the Tucson metro area, and then the other 45% is really spread out in more rural areas across the state. So not only is the population really diverse in, you know, age and health conditions, it's really diverse in, you know, areas that are served as far as reaching, you know, really rural areas and others in, you know, more metropolitan areas. So all really important things to kind of know and be keeping in mind as these programs are being developed. So as far as CMS allowed, with the implementation of Part D in 2006, CMS allowed a one-time passive enrollment to coordinate for prescription drugs. So for dual eligible members that were enrolled in our Health Choice Medicaid plan, we became a D-SNP, and CMS allowed those members to be passively enrolled into our plan for Medicare in January of 2006 to switch over that prescription drug coverage and keep it with Health Choice. So much like many of the plans that you all will have, we, you know, had an influx of members in January of 2006. And really, it took time to identify the differences in managing a dual eligible population versus the traditional Medicaid-only population that we had been used to. And what became clear pretty quickly is that this dual eligible population really needed some additional focus pertaining to that care coordination and just to really helping navigate the system. And specifically, the, you know, really key thing is just that focus on the social and economic aspects, the, you know, dealing with housing issues and, you know, lack of income, food, and, you know, those all really play into all aspects and, you know, really into hospitalizations. So the big piece about that is really needing to have staff, you know, in place to address and assist individuals with those issues. So I will now kind of send it over to Heidi, and she's going to talk about really the actual implementation of the program.
Thank you, Katrina. Hi, this is Heidi Eccleston. I'm going to go over the transition of care program here at Health Choice, the implementation process, the goals of our program, the care cycle, which is you'll see is a very interesting slide that kind of walks you through what this member is experiencing, and some helpful tips. So on slide 7, where it says transition of care program implementation, in 2010, we really started looking at our utilization and started wondering ways that we could better help our members, you know, decrease unnecessary inpatient admits or ER visits and really obtain their care on an outpatient basis, as well as help our providers and facilities. So in 2010, we started the program. We, of course, looked at high utilization, so you're looking at your inpatient admits and your high ER utilizers. But we also looked at underutilizers. When we look at underutilizers, really what we were focusing on are those members who had little to no utilization. The thought was, well, they're not getting any sort of outpatient primary care or any care whatsoever. So we really started focusing on those members and getting them into outpatient services so that we could decrease the likelihood of possibly having an inpatient or ER visit where we could get them established with a primary care doctor. We also looked at our post-acute, so members coming out of either our acute facilities, our rehab facilities, our skilled nursing facilities, and really helping them transition back to the community and be successful in transitioning back to the community, making sure that they have the services they need in place. And, of course, like I'm sure most plans, is looking at our emergency room utilization, really looking at how we can better steer these members towards alternative services than the emergency room. So the first thing we looked at is that, well, we're going to have to hire some care coordinators. Now, you'll hear care coordinators, you'll hear the word care navigator, you'll hear health coaches. Health Choice over the year has evolved, and we currently call them care navigators, which are usually, we like to look at some medical assistants, who have worked in back offices, so they kind of understand the coordination process from that perspective. Then we also have clinical care coordinators that are on the team, and these are usually our registered nurses or LPNs that kind of take more of that clinical focus, where our care navigators kind of help navigate through the system for transportation, appointments, community resources, things like that. As Katrina mentioned, it's very important when we're looking at our membership that only assist with their medical issues. We also need to look at their social and economic barriers they face. Often what we found is, you know, we have, you know, a young, and we do have families on our health plan, as we said, our average age is 50, where they're more focused on worrying about putting food on the table than getting to a medical appointment. So we really need to address that barrier before we can even get them engaged into any medical care. And another key, very key component is provider engagement. And working with providers, sometimes it can be difficult, but we really started looking at who is finding the right partner. Who do we want to partner with to kind of get this off the ground? And really, when we go to provider offices and we're showing our program and we're asking for coordination and help and how can we work together, we're really presenting it as their office is an extension. We're an I'm sorry, we're an extension of their office. We're here to help them manage the member. So kind of coming in at a team approach instead of kind of just saying, here, take the member and you're supposed to manage them. So we're really coming at a team approach and giving them support from the health plan side. Slide 8, smart implementation. One of the key things is if you don't know they're in the hospital, it's kind of hard to coordinate their care. So it's really bringing the hospitals on board. Currently, right now, we receive 100% of our contracted hospital network. They notify us within 24 hours of an admission, which is great because we'll get that data the next day. We know where the person is, and we can start care coordination right at that point. We also receive 80% of emergency room notifications on a daily basis. So if that person was in the emergency room the night before, we're getting that data the next day for the care coordinators to outreach. What we did is we really started with our own ISIS hospitals and how would the reports look, how would the data be pulled. And when we kind of got that finalized and streamlined, then we went out to other hospitals and kind of approached them and really showed them that you have the data, it's not that hard to pull, and we're here to help improve your emergency room and your inpatient admissions. A lot of the hospitals, we have EMR, so we're able to go out and through their electronic medical record, we can pull down who our members were that were in the emergency room. So it's no cost, it's no burden to many of the facilities that have the EMR. And then we expanded, of course, to other hospitals. One thing, I guess, where we really went on board with these providers and facilities is really we're all here for the same thing. We all want better health outcomes for our members. We want to decrease unnecessary readmissions and unnecessary admissions that could have been avoided if they were attending regular appointments with their specialist and primary care providers. And one of the big things is always having a point of contact at the health line. Here at Health Choice, when we go out, we provide the facilities, providers, whoever it is, we provide them with a single point of contact at the transition of care team, whether if they're having a problem or an issue or they need DME quickly, they know who they can contact to get that process going instead of going through the regular process, sometimes of sending in a prior authorization and waiting for it to be approved. And again, we're all here for the common goal. One thing, lessons learned, is you never go out and give false promises or false positive expectations to the providers, because if you can't come back and deliver that, you really set yourself up for failure right there. So what we did is, we come back as a team and kind of look, can we provide this if they ask for something and we're not sure, and then get back with them instead of promising them something they're not going to get. Slide 9, the goals of the program. Again, I mean, the main goal is, we want to improve member health outcomes. One thing is we can impact the member at the point of service. So when we know a member is in a hospital bed, we can get the utilization review nurse on board, we can get the discharge planner at the hospital on board, and if it's a member that we couldn't find in the community when we were doing outreach, we can reach them right there at that hospital bed and start care coordination. So really, too, it's to enhance the healthcare experience for the member, really showing them that someone's here, that who cares and wants to help them get better. A very important aspect and assessment to make when you're doing care planning is really ask if there's any family or other supports involved that could help support this member in their care plan and through the care planning process. The nice thing is to grab them where they are. One thing we found in many of our outreaches is our members are, they have financial concerns. And often they have a prepaid phone, and often we would find towards the end of the month that their phone was running out of minutes because they didn't have any more money until the beginning of the next month when they received a check to put more minutes on the phone. So we often find that in the first 3 weeks of the month we can have a better outreach success when they just get their check and they're loading their phone. We also found that they don't want to sit in the queue and wait for an appointment because that's eating up their minutes. So often my care coordination team will do the outreach, get an appointment, and then communicate that back to the member. And then through the Medicaid line of business, we arrange for that transportation for the member. So everything's kind of set up in one phone call and not using all their minutes up. One of the main things is, of course, you're identifying barriers to treatment. Often I hear, well, this person's just, they're not adherent. Well, why aren't they adherent? So really doing a thorough assessment and finding out why they're not adherent. And then, again, working with the family and member and provider. I mean, you'd be surprised sometimes when you hear some of the stories of why they're not taking their meds or why they're not going to the doctor and things that we can easily impact and change for the member. Slide 10, I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but this is just kind of our admission to discharge coordination of care cycle. So once we find out that member's in the hospital, our care navigator is on board right away. We get the PCP involved and notify that the member is inpatient and when they're discharged. And then really we start the care coordination process from that way. Either we're going to do the outreach and get the member an appointment if they don't have one. Some of our provider offices actually have care coordination teams, and they are the ones that want to do the outreach to the member, which is perfectly fine with us. We'll support that office in other ways. So that's kind of where the conversation comes with the provider. How can we help you, and what do you have in place, and what do you need from us? Going to page 11, some positive feedback. We conduct member satisfaction surveys throughout the year to kind of get feedback on our program, on how our coordinators are doing, on how our services are at the health plan. And below are just a few statements we received this year from one of our member satisfaction surveys. We had 13 questions with an average mean overall of a 1.33, with a 1 being always. And there was a couple questions that we learned after we read back through and why we scored a usual. And they're very subjective. Like one of the questions, for example, was, do you feel your overall health is better? And a lot of them answered, you know, either usually or never. And some of the comments they made was, my health is really bad and my case manager can't make that, you know, go away. So we really thought through that question and didn't think those were the answers we were going to get. So we'll look at that question going forward and kind of just really revamp the question so that we can elicit the correct information we need for our program. On slide 12, that's program enhancement. Program, like anything, program evolves over time. You learn that a certain process isn't, you know, quite working well. Sometimes your care coordinators will let you know, hey, this is a really bulky process. I thought about doing it this way, which is great. They're the ones doing the job. And really what we approach, what we've kind of touted our transition of care program to be, is a concierge approach, where it's not a cookie cutter. We will give the provider whatever they need. Some providers want us to do all the care coordination and feed them information. Some, like I said, large practices have their own coordination team. They want to do the outreach from that personal touch from the PCP, but they also want a point of contact at the health plan for any needs that should come up and help with that. Again, with hospital and facility coordination, I kind of went over this. We get 100% of our contracted hospital admission notification, so we get their diagnosis. We can get their treatment plan, their medication, their health and physical, and we can obtain all that, and usually through the electronic medical record. We can share that with the PCP. It helps my care coordination team know what to follow up with, too. 80% of the real-time ER census. So we have a daily census that my team and you are, and the utilization review team works off of. It's a daily census for members who went in for observation, acute, subacute, or LTAC status, so that we're working that daily and making sure that we're making that touch within one business day. Really important thing from a network standpoint that we've learned over the years is contract alignment. When we go out and we are going to go into negotiation with any of our providers or facilities, our contracts are always aligned going forward, that we contract with them for both Medicaid and our Medicare line of business. I mean, really, it just improves continuity of care, and it's easier for the providers and it's easier for the facilities if they just have both lines of business. A really exciting benefit we're going to be offering in 2014 is we're offering a meal delivery service as a supplemental benefit to members after an inpatient stay. And so my care coordination team will be talking with the members about this option, seeing if they're interested in it. One of the nice things is if you're not feeling well and you just got home from a hospitalization, you know, the last thing you want to do is really think about, oh, I have to stand in the kitchen and make a meal, even if it's a sandwich. So this program, they can just go to their fridge, they can take a meal out, pop it in the microwave, and they can have a hot, nutritious meal that's low in sodium, if that's what their diet calls for, or if they're vegetarian. And they can then be at ease that they don't have to worry about prepping food, or if they, you know, are struggling with food in the house, that they know that they will have something when they come home from the hospital. On slide 13, tips for a successful transition of care program. One thing is to really look at getting really good skilled care coordinators that understand what care coordination is. Care coordination isn't telling somebody, this is your PCP, go make an appointment. They're not going to do that. So really understanding from the care coordinator standpoint, too, that they understand the social and economic barriers that these members face and that they have community resources that they know where to go to pull to help these members meet those needs as well as their medical needs. Again, our population is very transient. For us to hit, to, you know, try and contact them while they're sitting in that hospital bed is very key for our population. And then utilizing our utilization review team, who's out in the field as a point of contact also. Again, provider engagement, you know, really engaging providers to have same-day appointments or after hours or even weekend appointments, and really working with them to open up those codes and extend those services. Again, like I talked about, coordination with hospitals and facilities, we have just an amazing relationship with our facilities that they want to notify us because they want our help to have the member not return if it's not needed. And then one thing my team really works with is ensuring the medications are filled after discharge. We can go into our pharmacy system, look to see if a medication was rejected, and if it was rejected, you know, work with our pharmacy team on putting an override in so that the member can get the medications until they can get in to see their outpatient provider. And then again, like we've talked about both Katrina and I, really the social issues that come with our members, the limited income, the challenges with them having to pay medication co-pays, housing, food. So we really rely on our community resources to kind of find resources out there that can help the member meet any sort of social barrier or economic barrier that they're facing. And that is all Health Choice has.
Thank you very much. Seal, you want to take us to Minnesota? Neil, are you there?
Yes, I'm sorry. I was on mute. So, all right, I'll just jump in to the overview of UCARE slide here. We are an independent nonprofit health plan in Minnesota. We serve over 300,000 members in Minnesota and 26 counties in western Wisconsin. And we are a plan that has very strong member representation and feedback. We've got 40% of our board of directors are members. We've got 3 member advisory committees, and we are continually conducting focus groups and satisfaction surveys. Our next slide talks about our enrollment in our Minnesota healthcare programs plans in Minnesota. We've got 184,000 members in several different plans. Our largest is our medical assistance PMAP program, which we have about 150,000 members. And we also have a Medicare Advantage business with roughly 90,000 members in that. So we're a pretty large health plan. So if you go to the next slide, it talks about UCARE transition management. Some of our programs are plans where we have an assigned care coordinator to work with our members. And as you saw in the last presentation, that care coordinator is a very vital part of transition management. In our Minnesota Senior Health Options and Minnesota Senior Care Plus programs, all of our members are assigned a care coordinator to act as their primary contact during a transition. And then in our UCARE Connect and UCARE for Seniors plans, transition management is actually done by RNs at UCARE. We have members who are assigned a care coordinator based on needs, and those with higher needs are assigned RN at UCARE to manage a transition. With our UCARE Connect product, which is our disability product, all of our members that undergo a transition of care are managed through that transition by an RN at UCARE. In the next slide, transition management prior to 2010, we actually got involved pretty heavily in transition management right around 2010. But prior to that, as we've kind of gone back and audited information from previous years, we've kind of know that transition management practices were not really strongly prescribed by the health plan, and were a little bit more sporadic. I think as far as the care coordinators go, they had less consistent knowledge and tools of, how to really manage transitions well. Our documentation processes for transition management were very inconsistent, as well as notification of the transition. So since 2010, we've done a lot of work on pulling a lot of that together so we have much better, stronger management of our care transitions. The next slide talks about notification processes, and right now at UCARE, one of the kind of the starting point to managing transitions is that hospital notification. Our hospitals are required by contract to notify UCARE of a hospital admission. It's always been a requirement for a very long time, but we know that even though they're required to do so, they don't always do it on the most timely fashion. Right now, I'd have to say about 80% of the time we get a notification within one business day. But for in the way our systems are set up, claims payment is the incentive for the hospitals to notify us. Our claims are configured to pay only when a notification is actually in our system. And our claims examiners actually go in and enter a discharge date prior to that claim processing. And without that, nothing processes. So that is really the big incentive for our hospitals to get paid, so, or to notify us. As far as we know, the requirements are similar for most Minnesota health plans, although some of them are bigger than us, and we know that they may have some more homegrown systematic processes for making sure that they get notified of an admission on a more timely manner. But right now we're looking at probably about 80% of the time we get it within that one business day. The next slide talks about our daily admission report, and this is a report where we've kind of have an internal process set up at UCARE. Hospitals notify us of their admissions, again, somewhat timely, usually within 1 to 5 days, but most of the time, about 80% of the time, it's been within one business day. We do not have a process where we sanction them for untimely notification. But what we do is then take that admission information and we post a daily admit report on a secure website the next business day. That is a report that goes out to all of our care coordinators. It's a secure website that each one of them can check into to find out admissions for their book of business with UCARE. So it provides a certification number to the hospital as well, but also providing the care coordination entity notification that an admission occurred. So again, for this, for us, this is our biggest way that our care coordinators know, other than being really in touch with our members, whether or not somebody was admitted or discharged. And then, you know, other than that, we know that in Minnesota there's something called a 278 transaction capability, and at this point in time, that is not in effect. That's a kind of a system where the hospitals would actually go down in a system and download an admit directly into our claims system. And at this point, that isn't happening, so we are doing the best we can with our current system. The next slide talks about our transition of care collaborative. Back in 2010, UCARE, as well as 8 other health plans in Minnesota, came together as a collaborative effort to do some really focused work with transition management. And a lot of this was focused mostly on the care coordination efforts and how the care coordinator can really get in there and improve the way transitions are managed, less on improving that whole hospital notification process. But as I said, 9 Minnesota health plans got together, and we worked really closely with the Minnesota Department of Human Services to identify best practices for transition management. This is where we really work together to develop consistent tools for care coordinators across the state to identify what they needed to do in a transition, as well as be able to give them a consistent way to document that and be able to transfer that information to a hospital or to a primary care provider so that everybody's kind of working off the same system and tools. And then one of the biggest things we did was provide statewide care coordination education. And again, with the help from the Department of Human Services, we're able to provide a statewide WebEx for all care coordinators so that they heard the same information and were learning on the same tools. And that worked really well. And in 2012, we redid that. So we kind of did some revisions to our tools based on things that we've learned in the past 2 years. And then back in April of this year, we did another statewide effort to provide updates and ongoing training for care coordinators. And it really was helpful to get all plans together, again, to provide that consistency in what we're asking care coordinators to do, but also in how they can document and also support each other. The next slide talks about the care coordinator training and just a little bit about that fact that that was based on Coleman's 4 pillars of transition management, which are the medication self-management, the primary care specialist follow-up, helping the member know red flags, things to look for after a transition, and then the use of the personal health record or caregiver record. Again, as we did this training and education, we provided a transition log with instructions, very detailed instructions as far as what to document where, and reviewed our care coordinator expectations about how to manage a transition. The next slide talks about UCARE transition support tools, and on our website we have quite a few tools to help support care coordinators in a transition. The first thing I talked about already was our daily admission report that notifies them of the transition. We also have our care coordination requirements grid that outlines what a care coordinator's responsibilities are when a member has a transition. We've got a policy that kind of outlines the same information, the transition login instructions. We've got a notification form for the PCP so that it makes it easy for the care coordinator to just fax that off and notify the primary care provider. We have what we call a What Do I Do If guide, and it's just helping the care coordinator identify if she gets stuck in any of those different tasks, like if the can't get a hold of the primary care provider, what do I do then, that kind of thing. And then the last thing is a transition of care brochure, which we make available to the members, and the care coordinator brings that out to the member on all of their visits and talk about the importance of notifying the care coordinator in the event of a transition, as well as what they can help with, and then how to prevent a transition as far as getting good preventive care, avoiding falls, and that kind of thing. So it really kind of brings out the importance of kind of avoiding a transition as much as possible. The next slide talks about our toolkit, and again, this is on our website, just some more general information for care coordinators, resource topics, the personal health record, information about screenings, fall prevention, that kind of thing, just additional information for care coordinators on transitions. The next slide talks about our transition log. This is an example of the log, and I know it's kind of hard to see on a PowerPoint, but it's just an example of kind of all the different things that we ask the care coordinators to log during a transition. It, number one, really helps to trigger in their mind, oh, what do I need to do? You know, I need to notify the PCP. I need to send the care plan to the receiving setting, all these different things. So it just kind of helps them kind of check off all the things that they need to do, as well as it's a good documentation tool for everybody. Our next slide talks about an audit that we do, and this is our way. We actually do this for a couple different things. It's based on our transition of care requirements, but we also are required to do an audit for NCQA structure and process measures. So it's a good thing for us because we can really identify how is our transition process working, where are kind of the stumbling blocks, and what can we kind of do to help improve things. And really this is kind of where our second round of training kind of came from as far as identifying things that needed to be improved further on. But we do an annual audit. We selected 110 transitions, and we've done this the last couple years. The next slide kind of talks about our results of things that we found during our audit. We audit quite a few more things than this, but these are kind of the primary things that we look at. The first item on the list there is a care coordinator notified of admission timely. This is, you know, obviously probably what we would say our biggest barrier to really good solid transition management. And as you can see, it hasn't changed much in the last 3 years. Again, we find that based on our hospital notification process, care coordinators are notified within one business day of when we are notified. So really it's as good as the information we get from our hospitals. But also sometimes we do notice that care coordinators may not go in and take a look at that list until a day or two later either. So we have two kind of things maybe working against us on that timely notification. We also are looking at whether or not it was a planned versus unplanned admission, and we're kind of hoping that, you know, our unplanned admissions go down and our planned admissions go up, but we do monitor that every year. some of the other things, like notifying the primary care provider in one day, educating the member rep, those are the things we really see improving as we do more education and training for our care coordinators. They've really kind of gotten on the bandwagon with trying to manage their transitions in a really good way, and you can see that in the audit results getting better every year for those things. But that notification probably is the most challenging thing about our whole transition process. So the next slide talks about challenges and opportunities. And again, the biggest thing is the timely notification of the care coordinator. We want to improve that from 63% within one business day. We want to see that at 100%. Inadequate documentation of transition tasks. Again, I think we believe that a lot of these things are being done. Sometimes they're not always documented. So as we keep going through this process and training, we are seeing better and better documentation, but that takes a little bit of time. We have ongoing care coordinator training needs as new ones start, and there's, you know, transition of care coordinators. It's an ongoing process, and we understand that. The other thing is we want to keep the focus on good transition management and not just really be focused so much on did you do this task, did you document it, but we really know that our care coordinators are out there working really closely with our members and helping them with the things they need to have done, and sometimes the documentation isn't always what it looks like is actually happening in the home. So we want to keep that focus on the good work that they're doing. The next slide just talks about some interventions based on our audit results, and again, this is where we've kind of developed some of our guides in response to care coordinators maybe not knowing what to do in certain circumstances. We actually put some best practice guidelines together back in December of 2012. We actually did, as I said, in 2012, actually they did some training, and then in 2013 they did care coordinator training in March through the Department of Human Services, and then in June at the Age and Disabilities Odyssey Conference. Again, we did some further revisions of our log, our instructions, and our trainings. So our next steps really are, again, to do ongoing care coordinator training. We believe that this has really been helpful, as we've seen over the last 3 years, a lot of improvement with what care coordinators are doing in transitions. And we believe it's very important to continue to collaborate with other health plans and review our transition of care processes every year, which we are doing on an ongoing basis, updating the tools and forms, and just we know that we've got some work to do around the notification by the hospitals, and hopefully, you know, and whenever we can get all of our systems together, we can see a big improvement in there, that area. But we, in the meantime, we're going to do everything we can on the care coordination and to try to do the best job we can with that. So with that, I am finished.
Seal, thank you very much. That was an excellent presentation, and Katrina and Heidi as well. We've got about 5 minutes or a little bit more for questions from the audience, so please jump in and tell us who you are and what state you're from.
Hi, this is Chris Cunningham from Massachusetts. I just had a question for Seal on slide 23 about the daily admission report. You said the hospital allows notify UCARE of admissions, and then you say you post the admit report on your secure website. What's the mechanism that the hospitals notify you, and how much information is on that notification, and is it is there a link to your own case management system for the members' needs and their diagnoses and their treatment plan?
Well, let's see. I guess I can't tell you right away, right off the top of my head, how much information's on there. I know they have a diagnosis and some general information. I know if I said something, it'd be the wrong thing. I want to say that comes in via fax from our hospitals, but I certainly could get back to you and give you more information about that. And then as far as the link to our own case management, let's see, I believe what we do is we take that information that we get from the hospital, we put it into our claims payment system, and then that generates for the next day that admit report that gets posted on the secure website.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, this is Michelle Goody, also in Massachusetts, and I had a question for the first presenters. Maybe it's Heidi. Your slide on program enhancements talks about contract alignment, and I wonder if you could expand on that. I'm not sure I understand exactly what you mean, aligning what contracts for which providers.
So in the past, early on when we, in 2006, when we became a SNP-D plan, we went out and contracted with some of our providers. Some of our providers were not contracted on our Medicaid line of business, but they did want to take Medicare. They may have been contracted with other Access Health or other Medicaid plans, but they didn't want to get into a contract with Health Choice for Medicaid, but they would take our Medicare members. So now when we go out and we are asking our providers in the community engaging in a contract, they need to agree to contract on both lines of our business. They don't have to.
Okay, thank you. Hi, this is Michelle again. I'm just wondering if I could ask either or all of the presenters about if you could speak to your responsiveness that you get from primary care providers and how you just develop good relationships and get responsiveness from that sector.
Sure, this is Steele. I'll try to answer that from my perspective. I think for us it varies as far as the level of responsiveness. Some of our care systems with care coordinators are bigger clinic systems, and they are able to just go through their IM or medical record, electronic medical record, and type a note to the PCP, and they all know right away what's going on. Although sometimes we have intra-system admit, so a person, is not admitted to a hospital that's not in their system, and then it gets a little bit more tricky. We try to make it easy for care coordinators to communicate with those primary care providers by either, faxing some information about the transition to them. Again, sometimes it depends on if they're the docs in that system or not. So again, we kind of have a wide variance of how receptive the PCP is to that information. Sometimes the care coordinators don't get any response back, and so they don't know if the PCP actually got their message or whatever. So again, I think the more in some of the bigger care systems, it's much more quick and ready and two-way communication. Sometimes in our rural areas, it's a little more spotty.
And this is Heidi. I can piggyback off that. I mean, we face those same challenges. I mean, in our large federal qualified health centers, where we have a bulk of our membership, our reps are, we really work closely with them, and we've built some medical homes within their practices. So it is difficult. But the larger practices, yes, I think we've had a little bit more getting in than some of the smaller practices or independent practices, but our network reps are always hitting the ground, and if we aren't getting a response back from a primary care office, that rep is being notified and they're doing outreach to that provider network. In our rural area, we actually have some of the best relationships up in the rural areas. It's because, and for us in our rural area, it's just that the providers are really, they're really part of the community up there, and they know everybody. And, they're sparse up there, so they work actually very well with the health plan and anything that we can help them with up in our northern Arizona, where it's very spotty as to how far you could travel to see a provider.
Thank you so much.
Well, and this is Steele. I'm just going to piggyback on that a little bit, too. I think for us with the building consistent tools and having our care coordinators all doing the same thing, I think it's made a difference in helping the providers be more aware of what's going on, because they're getting that same form from every care coordinator throughout the state when there's a transition. So it's not like, you know, they get something from somebody, something from somebody else. So that really has helped a lot, I think, in our processes.
I think we have time for one more question before I shift it back to Sarah for wrap up and next steps.
Hi, this is Chris Cunha from Massachusetts again. If you can, either of you speak to any collections of diagnostic categories or psychosocial factors that either lead to better compliance or better outcomes with members or other groups that you have less successful outcomes with amongst your populations that you served?
This is Steele. I don't know that we have that kind of information available.
Yeah, I hope so. I don't have that off the top of my head or available for me. I mean, I do know that for our Health Choice Generations, we did do, you know, a chronic care improvement program around cardiovascular disease. And just looking at that data, we saw that that we have a huge population that has, and we targeted members with both diabetes, hyperlipidemia, and heart disease. And we had a huge population, about 37% of our population fell into having all three of those categories with a 30% utilization rate. So right now we are focusing on a separate program, the transition to care program, for targeting those members and really seeing what we can do there. But in terms of general overall the transition, I don't have that kind of information.
Yeah,
okay,
one thing that states and health plans might want to do is take a look at the diagnoses that are being focused on in the Medicare penalties for excessive readmissions, because then you can take advantage of that sort of underlying financial incentive that's already there on the Medicare side.
Jim, may I ask one question of Seal, or did...
No, I'm turning it over to you, so go
okay.
ahead.
Seal, I actually have a question about, listening to the Transition of Care Collaborative. It sounds like it was started that the Minnesota Department of Human Services brought the plans together. I guess that's a question. And your plans for ongoing collaboration with other health plans going forward, is the state at the table, or are the plans sort of working among themselves, just since we have, you know, people on the line that might like to hear about how that coordination started and is proceeding?
I believe we've started as a collaborative with the health plans and identified right away that we wanted the state to be involved with us, and they were, it's kind of hard for me to remember what happened first, because I can't remember. I don't think that the state approached us, but it almost happened simultaneously that, you know, they thought it was a good idea that we work together and provided information for care coordinators, and right away, I mean, they were willing immediately to host a statewide video conference for us and got us on the calendar right away, and then we worked with the state on the presentations and on the training to do. So they were kind of like our partner every step of the way to do that, and then have been extremely helpful and partnering with us in, the ongoing collaboration, and as well as being able to pave the way for us to present and get all the care coordinators on the WebEx or the video conference at the same time. So they've been very supportive in bringing us together as a collaborative and supporting all of our efforts.
Steele, this is Pam. Can I just add really quick? I think the plans deserve the credit for thinking of the idea of collaborating amongst themselves on this in response to CMS's requirements around the structure and process measures and other requirements that are emphasizing these transitions. And then what we find as the state, that what we can facilitate is this collaborative thing, because if we're hosting or helping host the meetings or present at the the meetings, it kind of is a more of a blessing for the plans to be able to share certain kinds of information together, and so then we can add our support. So, but they really deserve a lot of the credit for taking the impetus here.
Thanks, Pam.
Well, I think we're almost out of time, but I wanted to, it sounds like we could keep discussing. I want to thank Katrina, Heidi, and Seal for presenting their approaches, their plans approaches to transitions of care, and I think that this is ripe for a follow-up conversation, so please stay tuned for a future study hall call topic continuing the conversation. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you all.